Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navati Tamastu Madhidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Verse 86. Yatha vidyurupa disyat. Yatha vidyurupa disyat. Pratishedastatanakim. Pratishedastatanakim. Suvarnalohabhedena. Suvarnalohabhedena. Shunkalatunabhidyate. Shunkalatvam nabhidyate. Yatha viddhihi upadhihi syat pratishedaha tatha nakim. Suvarna loha bhedena shrinkalatvam nabhidyate. This whole section is talking about, in detail, how the Mahavakya works, the Tetramasi that thou art. What is the process by which words, a Mahavakya, can give direct, immediate knowledge, what we call aparoksha jnana, as opposed to indirect knowledge, because we don't usually think of words as being able to give you direct, immediate knowledge, like perception. We think, when we talk about perception, sense perception, we think that gives direct, immediate knowledge. But we think of, if somebody is talking to you, or you're reading a book, or you're learning from words, you usually think of that as something which would give indirect knowledge. So, for instance, if there's a Mahavakya that says, you are Brahman, you are infinite, a person would naturally think, okay, I am infinite. Now, how do I realize that? Right? So let me go and meditate, or let me go do some sadhanas or something to bring about that realization of what the words have given me indirect knowledge of. This is how we normally think. But the Upanishads, the Vidyaranyam, this Panchadashiv, and brings out the example saying, you know, words can give much more than just indirect knowledge. For instance, in the Tenth Man story. So he spent a lot of time going over the Tenth Man story, where after counting the nine boys, the person feels the tenth boy feels that the tenth man has been lost. The old man counts the nine and then says, you are the tenth man. Right? And so, through the use of words, he's able to give direct, immediate knowledge to the tenth man that I am the tenth man. So he's used that example to show that there is such a way, there is such a means of using words to give direct, immediate knowledge. So, along with that example, he's gone through a tremendous amount of detail to show how this knowledge works. So the previous verse, this verse 86 that we didn't get to last week, is an extension really of the 85. So let me just review 85. It says, the distinction between the nature of the jiva, the individual, and the nature of Brahman, what separates them, or distinguishes them one from the other, is only the upadhi, only the conditioning adjunct, because actually the Atma is Brahman, the self of the jiva is Brahman. And so there is no real distinction. The distinction is only in the upadhi. When we say Brahman, there is no identification with the antakarana, with the mind. And so the upadhi is what? The mind, anything that you can mistake for yourself. But when you think of yourself as a jiva, you think of yourself as a conscious being who has this body and sense organs. And so if you just take it from the standpoint of the antakarana, your mind, that is the crux of the individuality, right? And this mind has a body and sense organs, etc. So it says, the nature of being a jiva and the nature of being Brahman, right? The only thing that distinguishes them is the upadhi, the conditioning agent. From the standpoint of Brahman, there is no conditioning agent because Brahman, the self, which we call Brahman, is infinite. But there's no conditioning agent. There's nothing that limits it. Whereas the jiva is limited by the antakarna, right? It's not a real limitation. It's an upadhi limitation. But what makes Brahman a jiva is seeing Brahman through the lens of the upadhi, of the conditioning agent of the mind. And so then the mind, the antakarna, says, I am the self. Just like saying, I, the mind, am the self. And there, by that ajnana, by that ignorance, it usurps the self. It takes over the self, as though the self now becomes the mind, wherein actually the mind is only an upadhi. And so here in this verse 65, he says, 85, I mean, he says, this, the nature of the jiva and the nature of Brahman is only differentiated by the upadhis, either having an antakarna, the upadhi which is with the antakarna, or without an antakarna. Not anyata, he says, there's no other way, there's no other distinction at all, because actually the jiva is Brahman, right? But what makes the jiva is the upadhi, saying that there's an antakarna, I am the antakarna, I am the mind. Like that's what makes that ignorance, that ajnanam, seen through the mind, creates the jiva. Nothing else. So now the objection, like an objection, answering a potential objection, he says, the objector can say this, you're calling the absence of suffering an upadhi. Because we're saying the only difference between being a jiva and being Brahman is having an upadhi or not having one. Be an upadhi with the antakarna, upadhi without the antakarna. So having an upadhi or not having an upadhi. He actually says it a little differently. He says, this is how in the Sanskrit it says, it's the upadhi alone that differentiates the state of being a jiva or being Brahman. The upadhi alone differentiates. In what form? By being with an antakarna, or by being with the mind, or being without the mind. Right? So he looks at either one as an upadhi. So the objector comes in and he thinks, you can't call being without the mind an upadhi, being without something. That's not a conditioning adjunct. It's not there. So I don't understand. He says, I don't understand what you're trying to do here. So anticipating this objection, Vidyaranya says, he says, just in the same way, yata viddhi upadhi syat, in the same way that an upadhi, a conditioning agent, can be viddhi, it can be something positively pointed to. That's the viddhi. Like your antakarna is an upadhi, your body is an upadhi, right? Your mind is an upadhi. All of these things, anything that can have a false identification, that is an upadhi. So that's viddhi, that means I'm positively asserting that. This is that. He says, pratishedha stata nakim. In the same way, why can't that be for pratishedha also? Pratishedha means negating. Why can't the upadhi also, if you can say, like it's like this, if I can say, with the mind is an upadhi, right? Then if I say, and not having a mind, that also is an upadhi. Why? Because it's a negation. Not because it's a real thing, but it's a negation of something that's considered as an upadhi. So he gives an example of that. He says, suvarna loha beda bedena shrekala tvam nabidyate. Shrekala are those, you know, those ball and chains. When a person, you know, have you ever seen those prisoners who are walking in chains? Their legs are fettered with chains. So they're called the shrinkalar, or the fetters, chains, you know, that bind a person. So these, the state of being a shrinkalar, a fetter, these fetters, these chains, is not nibidyate, is not differentiated by there being gold or iron. In other words, a chain is a chain. right? It doesn't matter if it's a gold fetter, if it's a gold fetter or it's an iron fetter. It doesn't make any difference. It's still a chain. He's using that as an example to say an upadhi is an upadhi, whether we're using the upadhi as a negative assertion or as a positive assertion. The upadhi is still an upadhi. So for instance, if I say that Brahman, seen through the upadhi, is the jiva, Brahman, not seen through the upadhi, right, is Brahman. You see what I mean? I'm still using the upadhi. Brahman with the upadhi is the jiva, right? It's what we call the jiva. Brahman without the upadhi is just Brahman. So here we're using a negative assertion of an upadhi as well as a positive assertion. What difference does it make? Whether you use negative or positive, you're still defining the self through the positive or negative assertion. So what? but these things, you know, it's important. Why these things? It's kind of splitting hairs in a way. But it's so important because in this, to understand this knowledge, to get this knowledge, you have to, your intellect, your mind has to understand how to listen to it, and how to see it, to really understand how it is possible for these words that are taking place at the time of teaching to make you recognize yourself that is already aparoksha, that is already present, right? And how do the words do that? How exactly does the Mahavakya work? And so he's leading up to that now with just this verse by verse by verse. So let's go on to the next one. This is all that is necessary for that. Because he's going to move through this now. Atadhyavritirupena sakshat vidimukena cha sakshat vidimukena cha vedantanam pravrittisyat vedantanam pravrittisyat dvidetyacharya bhashitam dvidetyacharya bhashitam atad vyavriti rupena sakshat vidimukena cha vedantanam pravrittihi syat vidā iti acharya bhashitam. He says the pravritti, second line, the pravritti of the Vedantas, of the Upanishads. Pravritti means the teaching methodology, right? The way of the means of enfoldment, the pravritti, how the Vedantas means how the Upanishads proceed. How do they go about unfolding this vision? Pretty part of them. How do they go about? What's their pravritti? How do they proceed? So what is the pravritti, the process of the Upanishads? So he says, this Vedanta pravritti, the pravritti of the Upanishads is dvidas, twofold, acharya bhashitam, as it is taught by the teachers, by the acharya. The teacher, the actual Shankara in the Atma Bodha has this verse, so it's really referring here to Shankara in the Atma Bodha. He says, Shankara explains it like this. The teaching methodology of the Vedanta, means of the Upanishads, is twofold. The first, atad vyavriti rupa, rupena. The first is in the form of negating, right, the atad. Atad means that which it is not. So think about this. Tat tvam asi. Tat tvam asi. Tat means that. Tvam you, asi are. You are that. So now, you are that means, what is the that? You are Brahman. Tat tvam asi, you are Brahman. Or you, the jiva, are Ishwara, the whole. Right? So to understand that Mahavakya, the first thing that has to take place is negating everything that is not tat, that is not that. Right? So atat vyavriti means the negation. So the first thing that has to be done is not this, not this, not this. It's what we call the neti neti. Neti neti. Not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. After the negation is done, then sakshat vidimukhena. Then it is through positive assertion that sakshat, direct, what is left. Sakshat, the word sakshat means what is here. Sakshat is what is right here. Through positive assertion, vidimukhena, through the doorway, through the mouth, through the doorway of vidhi, positive assertion, there's the direct understanding, having negated everything that it is not. So now think about this. When this teaching takes place, just say in reference just to the jiva, the teacher can't come to you and say, you know, yourself is infinite. It means nothing. Right? That's the positive assertion. You can't come and say you are Brahman. You know? But to be able to say you are Brahman, you have to first do the neti-neti, not na-iti, na-iti, not this, not this, not this, not this. Because right now, when you start, there's just a total identification. But it's not that this body, that I'm aware of this body, it's I am this body. Right? There's a total superimposition, like the red-hot iron ball. There's just one entity here. I am this. So the first thing that has to happen is I have to be able to realize that this body is an object of my five sense organs. That I'm actually aware that there's a subject-object relationship between the sense organs and this body. That this body is an object of awareness. It's not awareness, it's an object of awareness. Right? There's a subject-object relationship there. I have to realize that. Because otherwise, I am that. Right? Because the ahankara, the I, has always landed on this. This is an upadhi. Upadhi means it lends itself to being me. That's what an upadhi is. We call it conditioning adjective. So I say, I am this. In order to just say, I can't just say, you're not this. You know, I can say it, but you're just going to say, oh, what do you mean I'm not this? I have to show you that you're not this. I have to show there's a subject-object relationship, that you remain as all of these things are in constant flux. It's the same process. It's called drisha viveka, the seeing differentiation. Same thing with my sense organs. I have to see. These are objectified. I have to see the mind, the thoughts, the moods, the emotions are objectified. All of these things are being negated. Remember in the 10th man story? The old man comes to tell the 10th man, I can show you the 10th man. Before he says, you are the 10th man, he negates 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's neti-neti. Now, the 10th man is not this one. The 10th man is not this one. It's not this one. It's not this one, etc. All the possibilities are negated. And who is left? The 10th man. So now what happens? When all of the upadhis are negated one by one by one, who is left? What is sakshat? What is left remaining? It's me. And that's the vidimukhena. It's by the positive assertion, having negated from my being all the mitya, all the things, all of the different nama-rupa, all of the different upadhis that are not my being. Because remember in the previous verse, two verses ago, the only difference between the jiva, this limited being, and Brahman is the upadhi. Nothing else. Brahman has no upadhi. The jiva has an upadhi. So how are we going to make you Brahman? By negating the upadhi. There's no other way. Because it's not like you can do something to become Brahman. You already are Brahman. The jiva is Brahman. The upadhi is what's creating the problem. The upadhi is the condition, the mithya, it's the conditioning adjunct that you've mistaken to be your essential nature. And so this neti-neti, not this, not this, not this, not this, has got to take place. So this teaching methodology is twofold. Once the neti-neti is the first part, and then the second part is pointing to you, the one who is left, and making you realize that this being that you are is not something that is objectified. Then we start talking positively, describing yourself, using words to describe yourself that you now are sitting with as. You're sitting with it. You're sitting with yourself as this, because you've differentiated yourselves from the upadhi. So now we will use words for a positive assertion to talk about, to point to you. You see the self, your conscious, the conscious being that you are, is not an objectifiable. It's not a nama rupa. It's not a name. It's not a form. What is to make the conscious being that I am different from your conscious being? So these are all insights now. One about the nature, the limitless nature of yourself, once you've been differentiated from the upadis, right? And then from the standpoint of Ishvara, we have to go. Ishvara means the whole manifest creation, this manifest knowledge. Remember, we talk of the manifest creation, kind of the infinite projection of the creation of time and space as manifest knowledge. Okay. We have to show the mityatva of this creation. Means that the names and forms that you experience through your sense organs, through your mind, all of the names and forms that make up what we call the creation, everything that exists within all duality, that exists within time and space, right? That this duality that we experience is mitya. When we say it's mitya, what do we mean? Is that we can't find any substance here. All of the things that we say have substance, have being, like the lamp, is really just a name. It's only a name for a conglomerate of things that are infinitely divisible. There is no such thing as a thing in the creation. All we can do is infinitely divide things and watch them all come into being and go out of being. But this is a come into being and go out of being. What's the substrate? Being. The one thing that doesn't come into being and go out of being is being. And what is the nature of being? Consciousness. Why? Because consciousness is the only thing that is not objectifiable, that doesn't come into being and go out of being. So being and consciousness are one and the same. So that's the neti neti. Not this, not this, not this for Ishvara. Ishvara is also not mitya. Ishvara is Brahman. The truth of Ishvara is Brahman. Ishvara is not going to say, you're Brahman and I'm not. Right? If I am Brahman, if my being is limitless, then what is the truth of Ishvara? Limitless being. Then where does this upadhi, this body, mind, sense organs that I've just differentiated from my being, like this mitya, but when I differentiate it from my being, where does it land? In Ishvara. The whole nama-rupa of the creation, this body, mind, sense organs, all duality, are part and parcel of this creation. Not separate from the creation. And just like this lamp is infinitely divisible, so that you can't find any substance here, this body, mind, sense organs are equally infinitely divisible. They're as much Ishvara, they're as much mitya as everything else. But who is the self of this mitya? What's the satyam? You know, satyam, mitya. What's the truth of it? Is being. Me. Who's being? My being. What do you mean, my being? You could say, because my, who's owning it, right? The being which is me, okay? The self which is me. And so this teaching methodology has to take place in this way, because you have to remember where we're starting from. We start from being a jiva, who comes to the teacher and says, you know, hey, Bhagavan, it's all in one way or another, addressing the Lord or the Guru in one way or another. You know, please teach me. Who am I? Who is this person? Who am I? You know, the question is very simple. Who am I? This one that stands before you here. Who am I? Is there anything about this me, this one who stands before you, that survives death, that is free of the opposites. This person is, do I survive death? Am I free of the opposites? Can you tell me who I am? That the student is not asking for an experience of the self. The student is asking to know the self that is here. You see it? Just think of the language. Who am I? Doesn't mean, can you take me to find myself? It's, you know, can you take me on a journey to find myself? On a subtle journey. Maybe I can astral travel somewhere to find myself. It's not what it is. It's, who am I? Who is this self that is here? Is it a product of the body? Is it one with the soul so that it transmigrates? Is it a product of the body? Then when it dies, when the body dies, it will die. Does it survive the body? It's like saying, do I survive the body? Am I the one that transmigrates? What is my nature? How am I related to God? How am I related to the universe? This me. So the whole, that's why the Mahavakya can give direct knowledge. If there's a self somewhere else, words aren't going to give you direct knowledge because the object to be known is not here. You see? If the object to be known is not here, or the object subject, I'm using object to subject now, if that which is to be known is not here present, the words can't give direct knowledge. They can only tell you, they can tell you where to go to find it. Or they can describe it, they'll describe it to you and then say, now, I've described it to you, now this is how you get there. But the Upanishad doesn't do that. It doesn't describe it to you and then say, okay, now I've described it to you, now this is how to get there. Right? I mean, we do that all the time in the world. You tell about something and then this is how you get there. This is what you do to accomplish that. This is not that. It's, this is who you are. And the teaching methodology is meant to take you to the recognition of yourself that is present directly here as the being that you are right now. And the only problem you have is that your mind has misidentified your self-experience with objects of experience. You've misidentified your being, your self-experience, with the mind, with the body, with the sense organs, with moods, with emotions. There's a misidentification. And so that has to be cleared up. Right? But there's not any new experience of the self. There's just a recognition, a differentiation that makes you recognize the stability of yourself in the midst of all of the changing experiences. So that's how that works. So now, there's an objection. Can't be that easy. Aham artha parityagat, aham artha parityagat, aham brahmeti jikutaha, aham brahmeti jikutaha, naiva mamshasya hi tyagaha, naiva mamshasya hi tyagaha, bhagalakshana yoditaha, bhagalakshana yoditaha, aham artha parityagat aham brahma iti dihi kutaha na evam amshasya hi tyagaha bhaga lakshanaya uditaha. Here's the doubt. He says, aham brahma iti dihi kutaha. He says, how can there be the knowledge? Dihi is knowledge. Kutaha dihi. How can there be this, the knowledge, aham brahma iti? How can there be this knowledge that I am Brahman? Why? He says, aham artha parityaga. Because you've just completely wiped out parityaga, you've completely eliminated the meaning of I. Right? And so you've completely renounced the ahankara. I am the body, I am the mind, I am the sense organs, even the I thought. No. You parityaga, completely renounced all of that. And now you say, you gain the knowledge aham brahma. Where's this aham? You've gotten rid of the aham. Right? And how can you say I am Brahman? Because you've just gotten rid of me. You see? Because I am the ahankara, you've negated it. You know? Thrown it out. So he says, not even. It's not like that. He goes, amshasya hi tyagaha bhaga lakshana ya uditaha. He says, because there's only a tyaga, a renunciation, an abandoning of part of the ahankara, of a part, which is what we were, which was called bhaga tyaga lakshana. Right? And if you remember earlier, he went through this bhaga tyaga lakshana. Bhaga tyaga lakshana is a means, it's a let me just start from the beginning. Often when we speak, we're using what is called the direct, immediate meaning of a word. Yeah. That's called the vacharta, the direct, immediate meaning of a word, the simple meaning of a word. The laksharta is the implied meaning of a word. And so, for instance, the examples we've used are, for instance, if I say one type of lakshana, implied meaning of the word would be the villages on the Ganga, the villages on the river. Well, in that type of implication, my mind replaces river with bank. You automatically do it. You don't even think. If I say to you, the village is on the river, you think, yeah, the village is on the bank of the river. You just do it, right? It's a type of implication. And so another one, if we say, where I have to add a word, if I say, hey, look at the red running. There's a whole group of horses running, and one of them is red. So I said, look at the red running. So I look at the red running. What do I do with it? Good. I see the red horse. I immediately apply horse. Right? And so, but in this case, the type of lakshana is more like this. It's like if I say, the example they use for it is if I see a friend in the distance coming, and this person I know very well is coming toward me, bringing with them a friend. Right? And this friend I know says, hey, do you recognize this person? We look and, no? Have we met? I say, have we met? And then my friend laughs and says, do you remember, you know, in Sanskrit they'll say his name is Devadatta. Soyam Devadatta. Do you remember, you know, in third grade, oh, Devadatta, we used to play together, do you remember? Yeah, I remember Devadatta. You are Devadatta. You are Devadatta. So what happens then in that type of lecture, what happens there is that the third grade Devadatta and the present Devadatta, right, go away, leaving Devadatta. I have to get rid of the third grader and I get rid of this present guy. And what I remember, what I'm left with is the one Devadatta who was a third grader who is now here. See what I mean? Devadatta is somebody who both was the third grader and is here in the present. So I can't have this guy and the third grader, you know, alone. I have to see the one who was the third grader who is now here in the present. And that one is stable. Okay, so part of it, the third grader and the present are being dismissed because they're in opposition to each other. But what is left is the self of the third grader, who is the self of the present guy. You see that? That's called bhaga tyaga lakshana, where I give up a part of each one, and what is left is the one that is the same in both. So here, in this, in the Mahavakya, you are that. I do have to give up a lot, and so does Ishvara, right? Because Ishvara has to give up his whole upadhi, the whole infinite upadhi. And I have to give up the body, the mind, the sense organs, even the all of my knowledges, everything, all of the knowledge I've accrued, all of my emotions, all of my family, all of my relationships, and the ahankara, which is nothing but a thought. Right? All that has to be given up. But something remains. And that is the self of the ahankara. The one who has the ahankara. The one who has all the upadhis. And for Ishvara, it's the same thing. The whole maya upadhi has to be given up. But we're not giving up Ishvara. What is left is the self of Ishvara. The self of the jiva, having given up all of these things, including the ahankara, and Ishvara having given up the maya upadhi, what is left is the one self. The self of the jiva is the self of Ishvara. Right? And then what happens to the upadhis, the body, mind, sense organs, all of this, what happens to it? It's recognized as part of Ishvara. Right? It's not like the body, mind, sense organs are here and Ishvara's infinite upadhi is here. So this body, mind, sense organs, all of us are part and parcel of Ishvara. But from the standpoint of the upadhi, we are part of Ishvara. From the standpoint of the self, I am Ishvara. Because Bhagat Tyaga Lakshana, we're giving up the parts that are limiting. Every upadhi, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the eye notion, all of these things are limited. They belong, they're part and parcel of the creation. They're a part to the whole. But having done the neti neti, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, when you're negating these things as being part of your own swarupa, part of your own nature, as you negate them, they become part of the objective creation, part of the whole Ishvara's body. And I become Brahman. Not I become Brahman, I recognize myself as Brahman. So here, the objector is saying, you're getting rid of the ahankara, of the meaning of the... He actually literally says, you're getting rid of the meaning of the word I. No. We're getting rid of the mistaken identity. You thought the meaning of the word I, the aham artha, artha means meaning. You thought the meaning of the word I was this body. I am this body. That's the meaning of the word I. You thought that the meaning of the word I was I am the sense organs, or I am the mind. Or I am the body, mind, sense organs. I am the ahankara body, mind, sense organs. Right? I am this group. That's who I am. So that those meanings of the word I, yes, we are giving those up. But the sakshi, the self, right, which is not given up, right? The sakshi, the self that remains, that's not given up. Right? That remains. So here he says, this whole verse, so we can move on, he says, how can this knowledge, I am Brahman, how can there be this knowledge? How can it be? Because you've given up the meaning of the word I. And so Vidyarani says, no, it's not like that. We only give up part of it. We give up the part of it that you are not. Right? The part of it that is not your own swarupa. That part we give up, he says. And that's what we've said, because he's gone through this in previous verses. That's what we've called Bhagat Tyaga Lakshana. That's why that comes in. That's why it's so important. You know? So let's do the next word. It goes on from here. Antakarana sanchagat avashishte charatmani avashishte charatmani aham brahmeti vakena aham brahmeti vakena brahmatvam sakshi nikshate brahmatvam sakshi nikshate antakarana sanjagat avashishte charatmani aham Brahma iti vakyena brahmatvam sakshini ikshate. He says, avashishte chiratmani, in record, when the chiratma avashishtate is left remaining, after having completely negated the antakarana, etc., doing the, you know, the neti-neti. So after that has been done, we've negated all of the upadis. The chit-atma is left, the conscious being that you are. That is what's left, okay? And he says, aham brahma iti vakyena. Now, by the vakya, by the statement, aham brahma, I am Brahman, aham brahma iti, by the statement, I am Brahman, brahmatvam sakshini ikshate. The state of being Brahman then is directed toward the sakshi, right? Directed toward the one who is the witness. Okay, we'll just look at this for a minute, just in your experience. He says, having negated, completely abandoned, parityaga, given up, the antakarana. Antakarana is now standing for all of the upadis. When you do this neti neti, I am not this. To do this full language, I am, means I'm here, and I am not this. Right? Means this is I'm being objectified, I'm aware of it, I'm watching it coming and going, watching it change, subject-object relationship. So I am not this. Why? Because I, the sakshi, the witness, I am witness to this. I, the subject, and the sakshi, the witness of this body. Through my sense organs. I, the mind, am the sakshi, the witness, to my sense organs. The sense organs witness the body. I, the sakshi, the witness, as the mind, right, am the sakshi of the sense organs. Okay? So witness is going in, you know. We don't usually bring the witness in like this. We just land there, but I'm bringing it in this way. Sense organ, the mind. I am the sakshi of the mind. I am the witness of the mind. I am, and I am aware of my mind. So I am the sakshi of the mind. Now when I say I am aware of, I am the sakshi, I am the witness of the mind, I am the subject, the mind is the object. Mind is the subject, sense organs are the object. Sense organs are the subject, body is the object. Like that. But when we work inward, can say, I am the sakshi, even of my ahankara, the I notion. I am doing this, I am doing that. I am the sakshi even of my moods and my emotions. I am the sakshi of my relationship, my relationships. I am the sakshi of all of my knowledges and all of my ignorance. I know I don't know Chinese, etc. I am the witness of all of that. I am the sakshi. Now, when we've done this neti neti, not this, not this, not this, not this, all of these things that I am the sakshi of are negated from the sakshi. Now this sakshi is left alone. Here I am, the sakshi. What is the nature of that sakshi? Chit atma, the atma, the self, which is just consciousness. Because now you're at the sakshi, the witness. Let's illumine the witness. Let's objectify the witness. You can't. There's nobody behind the witness. There's nobody behind awareness to eliminate awareness. So that's why we say awareness is self-evident, self-effulgent, because there's not a sakshi behind the sakshi. There's nothing else to objectify. So now it is this sakshi that is left standing. So he says, avatishtate, avashishte chiratmani. It's this chiratma that is remaining here, having negated all of these upadis. And it's this chit-atma called the sakshi, which is now being pointed to by the vakya, by the statement, aham brahma. This me that is here, that has been differentiated from these upadis, it is this me that is aham brahma. I am Brahman. So, he says, I don't think he's going to say anymore. This is going to, it gets into a new...
It's a suspense.
Let's stop it here.
It's like Flash Gordon, we have to go back next week.
By the next magazine.
Let's take a minute. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Hari Om.
That the mind discriminates, or does the neti neti, right? Not this, not this, not this.
Yeah.
Is that the buddhi part of the mind?
Yeah, the buddhi. Right, because the buddhi is being addressed, made to see something, right? So the buddhi is really responsible for the knowledge. So say the teacher is directing you to see something. So I ask the mind to discriminate something. So the buddhi is making the discrimination. The consciousness that illumines the buddhi, the sakshi, the conscious being, that's the atman. But the buddhi is the one that's recognizing, making the discrimination between myself, the conscious being, and the thing that's being pointed out to as an upadhi. You see? Like if I say, for instance, if I say to you, your eyes are, through your sense organs, your eyes are aware of this body. Right? If you didn't have eyes, you wouldn't be able to see the body. Right? So I'm asking you to notice the truth of that. So who's noticing it? But that's true. That's the buddhi. Your buddhi is checking up, yeah, I am aware of this physical body. I recognize that's true. I'm aware of this body as an object that I'm perceiving through my sense organs. Now, and I'm, say if I go further, I say, do you notice that because of the mind, you're aware of the sense organs? Yes, that's true. Your buddhi recognizes the truth of it. So the buddhi there is gaining knowledge, it's gaining information.
Right. It's like clarity and wisdom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
But that also has to be given up, though.
It doesn't have to be given up because the self, this is the discernment that has to be made here. Your self, the self consciousness, it is its own experience. That's why we say it is self-luminous. Consciousness is consciousness. Consciousness is not the buddhi. The buddhi is not responsible for the consciousness, the self-evident nature of consciousness. The buddhi doesn't contribute, or the mind doesn't contribute, or the universe doesn't contribute to the self-evident nature of my being. So the problem is with the buddhi is that the self-evident nature of my being is pervasive to the buddhi, as it is pervasive to the whole creation, actually. But the buddhi has ignorance. And so because of the ignorance, the buddhi, the intellect says, or the mind, we'll just use mind, the intellect says, I am the conscious being. And therefore, when I am happy, consciousness is happy. If I am smart, consciousness is smart. If I'm stupid, consciousness is stupid. When it just identifies totally its own nature with consciousness. And so when the teaching takes place, what happens is the buddhi itself recognizes that it is objectified, everything about it. Even the one that's saying, I am objectified, that is also is objectified. And that the consciousness itself remains the same. But the buddhi is recognized that the consciousness is free of it. It's the self of the buddhi, but it's free of the buddhi. That's why a thought can come and go, consciousness doesn't come and go. But when the thought is there, there's no separation between the thought and consciousness, but consciousness is not dependent on the thought. And so the consciousness itself has nothing to do with the buddhi, with knowledge or ignorance. I mean, the consciousness is as much there for the ignorant mind as it is for the jnani. It doesn't make any difference. The consciousness is the self of the whole creation. Whether an object is an inert object or it's a living object, it doesn't make any difference. Consciousness is the self of it. But now for jivas, the problem is that the jiva, because it has a mind and it has for its essential being consciousness, but the jiva has ignorance. So it says, I am. My form, my finite form is producing this conscious being. And this finite form is subject to death, is subject to change. And therefore, my being is subject to death and subject to pain. So there's a total, what we call superimposition that's taking place there. And that mind has to recognize that superimposition. And the ignorance is removed from the mind.
It seems to me that like the buddhi is still subtler than the mind in the sense of the emotions and
yeah.
So forth.
It is say the buddhi is subtler. Because the buddhi can act upon the emotions. It's still the mind. Right? The buddhi, the mind, the manas, the ahankara, the chitta, these are still all aspects of the mind.
Yeah, because it's thoughts still.
Yeah,
right?
It's still thoughts. But we say the buddhi is the most subtle because it can act upon the mind. It can draw in memory, it can calm the emotion. It's objective. The buddhi enjoys objectivity.
So it almost seems like the buddhi is the last, if there's such a thing as going in, is the last one that objectifies still.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's it.
And then the witness is consciousness.
Yes. The witness is consciousness. And actually,
because it doesn't have a quality, right?
It's just consciousness. We call it the witness. The witness nature of consciousness, it goes away. That is something that we use as a teaching device to differentiate consciousness from the buddhi and from the mind. Because when you think of it, say, consciousness, I'm not going to use witness for the moment, consciousness illumines the mind. Okay? From the standpoint of the mind feels it is known. Right? The mind is known. Right? It feels that way. And so we say, in order to differentiate consciousness from the mind, from the known mind, we say that sakshi, the witness, we start that way. The witness of the mind is differentiated from the mind. Now you remove, just hypothetically, you remove the mind, and what is consciousness witnessing? It has no upadhis. It has no mind, it has no sense organs, it's just pure consciousness. It's like saying the sun is witnessing the earth. So the sun's not witnessing the earth, it's just light. Consciousness is just consciousness. But from the standpoint of the mind which is illumined, we call it the sakshi, in order to make that subject object. And then when we remove the upadis, the sakshitvam is removed also. So it's very useful, but it will resolve into consciousness.
So I was really with you and the unfolding of that during the lecture, kind of from the Buddha to the Sakshi to consciousness. And where I get confused is when we introduce the self sort of in there somewhere. What is this?
The consciousness is the self. The consciousness is Brahman. There is no other self.
So that's my understanding. So it seems, I guess in my mind at least, that the usage of the word self is just sort of a redundant kind of
It isn't redundant. Well, let's put it this way. I wouldn't call it redundant, like Atma means self, right?
Right.
Now, everyone has a here, every human being, every animal, in fact, everything, has a sense of self, a sense of me.
Okay. Right? It's sort of that, it's a very simple notion.
That has no, not we're talk, not getting about thoughts, it's about the me that has this thought and that thought and that thought.
Mm-hmm.
The me that indwells the body. Just me, my own presence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We call that the self.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that self that we call the self and is taken to be an individual, that self is Brahman. That self is infinite. And it has been taken, the self has been taken to be in the form of the body, mind, sense organs because of ajnana, ignorance. But actually, the self that you are is Brahman. Right? And so it's not really redundant because everybody wants to know who am I,
mm-hmm.
right? And so instead of the Buddhists go about this a different way, because when they use the word self, they're talking about the upadis.
Mm-hmm.
And those upadis you are not.
Mm-hmm.
But we're saying that you are. But the one that you are is the one infinite being that is the very truth of everything.
That's where my mind just pushes back immediately, because it says, well, if I am limitless, then self is a very, I mean, it's notional.
No. You see, the notional self is what's being dismissed. Okay, but, so you can say, like, the notional ahankara. So the notional self is when the ahankara, the I notion, identifies with the body, with the mind, the sense organs, and all of that. But now, what is the truth of your being? What do you want to call it? Now you call it the I. You call it an ajnani, who doesn't have knowledge, they call it I am, but what they mean, I am the body, mind, sense organs, this conglomerate. I am all of this thing here, subject to birth and death. But what we're saying is that I, that is notional in the sense that it's being misidentified, the I isn't notional, but the misidentification is notional. So now, to just follow me here, if I say the I, the content of the I is not notional, but the word I and what the word has been tagged onto, that is notional. And so now say we were to dismiss all of the notions. The universe would go, the body would go, the sense organs would go, the mind would go, the notional I would go. But what would be left would be me, without any words, without any name, without any form. The content of the notional I would be left. And that content is Advaita.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense? Or is there still a snag there?
I mean, part of it's just the way I hear the word me, you know, and what that means.
But I'm using the word me on purpose. I'm using it on purpose because, but though you have to go through a whole teaching methodology for it to work, but the me that you take to be you, it is that me that is Brahman.
Right.
But the me has been superimposed. Right. That very personal conscious being that is not subject to time or space, but that core me is Brahman. If the whole universe goes away, it is that which is there. And so I use that word me intentionally because personalizes it. Mm-hmm. And then from this personal me, I remove the body, the mind, the sense organs, the mm-hmm. notional I, and the universe. Mm-hmm. And what is left is the core, mm-hmm. which is limitless, which is Brahman. So you have to be careful, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was the issue about redundancy?
It won't be an issue for you.
Okay. What does the word redundancy mean anyway?
It means super. You're using it twice. Why are you bringing in this word that really means the same as consciousness? So if I use the word consciousness, why bother with the word Atma or with the word self? Which is a good question because we use, and it's an important question actually, because we use this word, the word self has meaning in empirical reality. When you use the word self, you're talking about your body, mind, sense organs. Person, this person. That's why you use the word self. Okay, that self, we are negating.
Yeah.
But that's the Bhagavad Gita lakshana. That's the partial negation. Because what's left
is the self.
Is the sakshi. What is left is what is really the self. These things are not really the self. These things are negated as, in fact, as anatma. They even use the word anatma, not the not-self. I mean, in the Vedanta we use it too. This is anatma. The body is anatma. Sense organs anatma. Mind anatma. Ahankara anatma. None of this are the self. What is the self? The sakshi. But then when you've eliminated all the anatma, the sakshi is not a sakshi. It's just Brahman. Yeah.
Well, there's nothing left to witness, right?
Like all that's left is the witness, mm-hmm. which is nothing left to witness means the witness is just consciousness. That's the truth of the witness.
What is bhagya?
Bhaga, part, mm-hmm. a part. Mm-hmm. The bhaga tyaga lakshana, the elimination, getting rid of a part. Mm-hmm. Right. The other one you might be more used to is jahad. Just made it. Jahad. Ajahad lakshana. Have you heard of that one? Mm-hmm. Jahad ajahad lakshana. Mm-hmm. That means the implied meaning where you keep a part, jahad is getting rid of, ajahad not getting rid of. Part you get rid of, part you don't. That's the same as bhagat yaga lakshana. And bhagat yaga lakshana is sometimes just called bhaga lakshana. Mm-hmm. The implied meaning of a part. Mm-hmm. They all mean exactly the same thing. Different terms.
Nice to talk about the
Mahabhagya. Yeah, it is. You can see this book is, I mean, this chapter, how thorough it is. Mm. It's amazing. Mm. It's nice to just kind of slog through it.
Well,
okay, I've got to talk to a couple people tonight. I don't want to call it a night.